A series of breaking stories tonight. We start with the coronavirus cases in the D.C. area, now about 40. And the outbreak has led to more cancellations and other measures to prevent its spread. In Maryland, Governor Larry Hogan is taking what he calls major steps. The state's public schools will be closed for 2 weeks, and the governor's also declaring a state of emergency. Our team coverage starts with WTOP's Megan Clardy.
Maryland State Superintendent Karen Salmon announced public schools will be closed starting Monday, March 16th through Friday, March 27th, a full 2 weeks.
During the time of school closure, all public school buildings and school buses will be cleaned and disinfected.
Salmon says in discussions with school districts, she'll urge them to use scheduled spring break days as makeup days.
We have started to work immediately to ensure that vital services, such as the provision of meals to students, will continue to be provided throughout the duration of this school closure period.
The Maryland State Department of Education's directive to schools does not apply to childcare facilities, and the state has yet to determine guidance for those businesses. Megan Clougherty, WTOP News.
This is Kate Ryan. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan's issued an executive order banning any social gathering of more than 250 people. It's just one of the measures designed to stem the spread of the disease caused by the coronavirus. Governor Hogan also announced,
we are directing all hospitals across the state to immediately adopt new visitor policies to limit the spread of COVID-19.
Access to state buildings, including the Maryland State House, where the General Assembly is in session, is restricted. And lawmakers announced that they will remain in session, but will allow only those with a state-issued credential access to House and Senate office buildings. The legislative session ends April 6th. Kate Ryan, WTOP News.
Meantime, in Virginia, Governor Ralph Northam declared a state of emergency this afternoon. There are now 17 confirmed cases. 10 are in Northern Virginia.
Governor Ralph Northam is urging all Virginians to avoid large gatherings for now. All state conferences and other big events are being canceled for 30 days, along with all out-of-state travel for state employees, with some exceptions. Right now, the governor says the Commonwealth has enough coronavirus test kits, but it might develop its own. And
we are watching the experiences of other states, including the use of drive-through testing, and we're considering that option as well in our Commonwealth.
As for schools in Virginia,
we continue to urge that public schools make their own decisions in consultation with local public health officials.
Michelle Bash, WTOP News.
The death toll from the coronavirus is now over 1,000. Now, while most of those cases are in China, thousands of people on board a cruise ship in Japan are also in quarantine after dozens on board tested positive. And that includes a woman from this area.
I am feeling just great.
Athene Bell of Manassas has been quarantined in a Japanese hospital with coronavirus.
I never have demonstrated any of the typical characteristics for the virus.
She was taken off the ship after a throat swab indicated she got the virus while on a cruise.
I'll take it at their word that I have this virus.
Her stay in the hospital has been nice, all things considered.
They've opened up their arms. They're extremely kind. They respect your privacy. I have wonderful accommodations here.
Her husband, Rod, remains on the ship, spending most of his time primarily inside their cabin, which luckily has a balcony. And they've been able to speak regularly throughout the day when the ship is at port. John Doman, WTOP News.
Have you been spending lots of time and money cleaning? Dr. Anthony Fauci says it's helpful, but since the virus travels by air, you should put a lot of your focus on what he calls the big five.
Masks, physical distance.
Also avoiding.
Crowded indoor sessions.
Then.
Washing your hands and doing things outdoors more than indoors.
While he says.
It doesn't mean you should neglect cleaning off surfaces, which is important.
He believes.
If you can focus on those, I think everything else may be important, but a little bit more secondary than those five primary ones.
He adds one more for businesses. Keep hand sanitizer containers filled. Mike Murillo, WTOP News.
And with bars and restaurants forced to shut down in Maryland and D.C., except for takeout service, local business owners are struggling.
Adjusting to the new restrictions has been difficult for some business owners. Tom Johnson with the Hill Restaurant Group had originally pushed back against Mayor Muriel Bowser's orders that all restaurants and bars must now operate as carryout only.
If you're going to make these rules, you still got the metro open, you got the buses running, they got to come in the same way, they got to touch doorknobs.
He's since agreed to comply and says he'd rather be forced to close his doors in order to possibly qualify for some kind of assistance, but says the chances of his business and others closing for good are now pretty high.
I don't know if there's any coming back from it.
A Rockville woman is telling WTOP her COVID-19 survivor story. She tested positive and soon found herself in the intensive care unit of a hospital.
58-year-old Vanessa Strunk is a small business owner from Rockville. She got COVID-19 and remembers two things from intensive care, what she called the sad eyes of her doctors, and being told,
"You have a 50-50 chance. Fight."
Dr. Manu Kaushal, director of the ICU at MedStar Montgomery Medical Center in Olney, explains he wants to offer comfort, but has to be honest. Before entering a COVID-19 patient's room, he takes a moment.
I am not sure if this patient is going to make it or how long the battle is going to be.
Strunk remembers the masks that dug into her face.
They gave me a high-flow oxygen mask.
She was getting oxygen at 60 liters per minute. Kaushal says typically a non-COVID pulmonary patient gets 6 liters a minute maximum.
Once they get into the ICU on that much oxygen, there's anybody's guess which way this is going to go.
Strunk said she made a conscious decision.
Let's see what happens. I'm going to fight.
Kate Ryan, WTOP News.
It was a roaring flyover that left lots of people standing outside all over the area, including at Prince George's Hospital Center. So the best of the best and everyone else could say thanks to the healthcare workers fighting COVID-19. Now, a warning for folks driving right now, you will hear car horns in this report.
There were dozens and dozens here, some of them regular citizens, some of them the doctors and nurses who have been working so hard, wanted to get a glimpse of the Air Force Thunderbirds and the Navy's Blue Angels.
They have been going full bore for several weeks now, and just the acknowledgement and the honor of an event like this for them is huge.
Dr. Joseph Wright is the interim president and CEO of the University of Maryland Capital Region Health.
I see folks coming in who aren't even on duty today.
The flyover was quick and ended with cheers for the pilots and then cheers for the healthcare workers outside too, like Alexis Benjamin, an ER technician who wanted to give credit to all the police, fire, and EMS who have helped out too.
It's also all of them that work very cohesively. We work cohesively together, and everyone does a fantastic job.
In Chevrolet, John Dome in WTOP News.
The coronavirus quarantine has forced us to entertain ourselves with books, music, and TV shows. But WTOP's Jason Fraley says there's something you might not have tried. Here it is, playing board games remotely with family and friends.
Time to play the game.
My wife and I recently FaceTimed my parents for a remote game of Scattergories.
Okay, list one, and the letter is B. Go!
It's a great way to feel connected, but there were some challenges. First, we had two different editions, meaning our categories didn't match.
Your list two is our list four.
This can create hilarious wrong answers like babe for terms of measurement instead of terms of endearment. Our timers also clash with different time limits, but like sand through an hourglass, these are the days of our lives in quarantine. But social distancing doesn't have to be lonely. Just call up the family and say, game night? Jason Fraley, WTOP News.
While health officials are encouraging people to stay at home the holiday season, many have already decided to catch a flight out of town for Christmas, and it's been a pretty busy morning at Reagan National Airport.
Lines at check-in, security, and plenty of hand sanitizer.
I'm a little tired, but excited.
Amina Hardy says she decided to spend the holidays with her grandchildren in California.
They got me cooking when I get over there.
As for what she's doing to stay safe.
90% sanitizer, I'm going to wipe the seat down, and that's what's recommended. I'm going to follow the directions.
Her husband, Joseph Henley, says he feels most travelers will follow guidelines.
I think all of us going to be in that big silver tube, and we're going to be probably a little more conscious of each other's social distancing.
But Sophia Garzan, who's heading to Florida, says she feels differently.
I'm sorry, but I don't care. I mean, I already had coronavirus, so I'm not really too scared about it.
But to help save the lives of those who are vulnerable, health officials are urging people to just stay home. Melissa Howell, WTOP News.
Breaking news on WTOP.
What had been fairly peaceful demonstrations in downtown D.C. have gotten more intense in just recent minutes here close to the White House. We take you live on Skype to WTOP's Mitchell Miller.
Dimitri, I am here in Lafayette Park right across from the White House and standing right in front of what is called the Treasury Annex, which is right across from the Treasury Building. This is an area where now hundreds of people have gathered. They have crushed toward the doors. There was a lot of jostling there, some pushing going on. Actually, some people started to run away from the park, fearful for what was happening. Everything settled down briefly, but now there is a very, very large crowd yelling all kinds of things related to this protest.
Black Lives Matter has begun a rolling demonstration tonight in Washington. Hundreds of vehicles, many sporting protest signs, began driving out of a Northeast D.C. parking lot headed downtown. Just a warning, if you are driving tonight, this story has the sound of cars honking.
No justice, no peace, says a sign in one of the car windows. Another car has lettering scribbled on the trunk. It reads, "Stop Police."
In all honesty, all we want is peace. We just want the people that are supposed to protect us to do that.
Students, seniors, families with children are packed into some of the cars. Jenna Alcorn of Arlington is part of the Black Lives Matter car caravan.
It makes me extremely frustrated and angry to see innocent black brothers and sisters dying at the hands of the police who are supposed to be protecting us.
It took well over an hour for all of the protest cars to clear out of the parking lot. In Northeast D.C., Dick Iuliano, WTOP News.
I'm Nick Einelli. Things got out of control in Richmond, Virginia as riots broke out. A car was set on fire outside Richmond Police Headquarters, and a city bus was set on fire as well. In Baltimore,
why can't the black community get justice? Why can't the black community get peace?
The demonstrations didn't turn into riots as they did 5 years ago. Mayor Jack Young says what's happening now is bringing back bad memories from then.
It reminds us of the same type of situation that took place.
In 2015, riots broke out in Baltimore when Freddie Gray died from injuries he sustained in police custody.
WTOP's Alejandro Alvarez says the situation is serious.
There is a fire inside the AFL-CIO headquarters. The lobby of the AFL-CIO headquarters is currently on fire. I can hear the sprinklers running inside. There are fire alarms going off all throughout the building. The windows are smashed and the doors are graffitied, and there is no fire engine activity anywhere here. The lobby is just free to burn.
St. John's Episcopal Church, the Church of Presidents, that's 200 years old, was also set on fire overnight. From the outside, the damage appears to be minimal. Inside, fire alarms are still going off there, too. A few blocks away in the Farragut Square area, more shattered glass. Businesses broken into and looted, people taking what they could, whether it was clothes or even eyeglasses.
We have a developing situation in downtown D.C. as we are 20 minutes away from a curfew in the city. Let's go live to downtown. WTOP's Ken Duffy is on the scene. He's on Skype. Ken, what do you have?
Well, Sean, things have gone from 0 to 60 in a matter of seconds. We are seeing police right now. I can see them clearly coming down the street. So they have formed a perimeter. If you can see the visual here, it's a line of police in right here on one side of the street on 17th and another on 8th Street. So half of the intersection cut off. They're trying to corral people to head southbound on 17th. So they are clearly trying to get everyone out of here before the curfew begins at 7. They do not want to take any chances. So there's another. Those are just fireworks. And now we see more tear gas. It's coming toward us. I am safe. I'm just running backwards.
Okay, Ken.
Right by us.
Okay.
All right. I'm okay. Don't worry.
All right.
Stick with me. A lot of people running. Boy, Sean, this has really been an intense enforcement here. Incredibly intense. A lot of tear gas just deployed. I got out of there right before it was hit here.
This week marks 3 months since George Floyd was killed by police in Minneapolis, sparking nationwide protests and putting new energy into the Black Lives Matter movement. Some protesters want to defund the police, but that is deeply unpopular with critics who call it impractical. WTOP's Nick Iannelli spoke with Black Lives Matter DC organizer April Goggins to better understand what defund the police actually means and why the group wants it.
The Black Lives Matter DC movement added that defund the police part to the Black Lives Matter plaza that's written on the street near the White House. What does that mean to you, defund the police? And do you think that that sort of message, which could be taken as a radical message, do you think that that hurts your overall cause?
We do believe in the eventual abolition of police and prisons. We believe that they don't do the things and can't do the things that people actually want them to do. Both the data and the numbers just don't support them being the answer to true safety. They weren't created that way. And they just literally can't, regardless of how you feel about policing.
So when you say defund the police, you're actually saying abolish the police.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
If our major cities, many of which are seeing rising gun violence, didn't have a police presence, how would they deal with violent crime?
Police don't deter crime. They cannot police people's minds. There's not a way for them to actually stop crime before it happens. We know that the numbers in all cities and states show that even increased policing, especially when it comes to homicide, they don't actually stop homicides. Most of the things that people say that they want the police to do, you do not have to be a police officer to do. Those are things that you don't need a gun to do. Communities can make decisions about how they will be in relationship with each other. They can set rules and develop their own systems of accountability that actually are about doing the hard work of understanding why people do the things that they do, what can prevent them from doing it again, and to repair the harm that they've caused while also being in charge of making sure other people don't do the same thing they did.
That was Black Lives Matter DC organizer April Goggins speaking with WTOP's Nick Iannelli. To hear the entire interview, just head over to WTOP and search Black Lives Matter.
Breaking news on WTOP.
Democrat Joe Biden has won Pennsylvania, surpassing the 270 electoral vote threshold to take the White House and become the 46th president of the United States. The Associated Press, CBS, NBC, and CNN have all called the race. Biden carried Arizona, Wisconsin, and Michigan as well on his path to the presidency, flipping states that President Trump won in 2016.
WTOP's Dick Giuliano joining us live now from McPherson Square. That's been a hub for a lot of Biden supporters throughout this week. Dick, what are you seeing?
Mike, you'll hear the cacophony of car horns honking in the background. We're two blocks from the White House at McPherson Square. Celebration has broken out here at 15th and I Streets Northwest over the declaration that Joe Biden has been elected president, defeating President Donald Trump. A crowd has gathered here under a beautiful day, summer-like conditions, which has sort of increased the festive atmosphere. People are wearing big smiles. They are celebrating. They say they see better days ahead, that they're pleased with not only the victory of Joe Biden, but also Kamala Harris, apparently to be the first woman vice president of the United States.
WTOP's Alejandro Alvarez is on his way to the White House to cover things there, and he's not alone as D.C. is already celebrating the country's apparent next president.
Almost at the White House now, moving east on K Street past the Farragut North Metro, and honestly, the amount of traffic you're seeing on the street, this does not feel like your typical Saturday. K Street is essentially jammed in both directions. Some people are waving Biden flags out of their car windows. Already, I'm not even at the plaza itself, but I can tell that there are more people there than I've seen in months, because the northern approach to the plaza on K and 16th is already full of people, and that probably stretches all the way two blocks south to the White House itself.
WTOP's Andrea Cambron talked with a group gathered on Howard University campus this afternoon to celebrate their alumna, Kamala Harris, as vice president-elect.
Lena Cox is a member of the historic Black sorority, and she says she is speechless.
I can't even put it into words fully, because I haven't been able to talk about it without crying today. But my daughter said something earlier, and she was like, Mommy, the vice president is a Black woman like you. And I lost it. I am beyond myself. She is so representative of who we are as women, as Black women, as members of Alpha Kappa Alpha. And I'm ecstatic.
Andrea Cambron, WTOP News.
And here's what it sounded like as WTOP's Dave Dildine drove through all four quadrants of D.C. Now, warning, you're about to hear honking, a lot of honking.
A cacophony of jubilation in the streets for hours and hours in DuPont Circle, yeah! Scott Circle, Southwest Waterfront, Navy Yard, Cleveland Park, Chevy Chase, Capitol Hill. Celebration on nearly every street corner. In the district, Dave Dildine, WTOP News.
So let's get started with this. What we're going to do is we're going to hear from several people who sent us these reflections, and then we're going to talk to one of those people.
My name is Jesselyn. I am a multiracial woman raised primarily by white people. I live in Oakland, California, and the killing of George Floyd was heartbreaking and also infuriating, not only because it's a gross abuse of power and violence again, but because our community members have been surviving and grieving and witnessing and calling out this injustice for literally hundreds of years.
My name is Lars Sindes. I'm an Indian Jamaican living in the United States for the last 25 years. I am a naturalized American citizen. The issue of race has been at the forefront of my existence from whence, as far as I can remember. And it cuts across all bounds. It's not just a white thing. It's a global thing. Even in Jamaica, there are levels of racism in our society, even though you may think that Jamaica is 98% non-white. The problems of racism, the implications of racism exist in our society there. But it's not as bad as here in the United States, where it is overt, it is blatant, it's in your face. It's pretty much everywhere you go.
My name is Aya Sadiq. I am Middle Eastern. I'm Palestinian. I have a light complexion and green-colored eyes. Some would say I even look Caucasian. So often, I blend in with white Americans. It's the moment I begin talking that people realize I'm not from there. Where are you from, they ask, a question often too complicated for me to answer. And although I'm originally Palestinian, I almost always settle with, I was born and raised in Dubai. A part of me was afraid of saying Palestine. As a Muslim Arab in a post-9/11 world, I knew I needed to be aware of how I could be perceived the second I decided to come to the United States. This was an America where fascists and white supremacists and Islamophobes reigned the country. Every time I was asked where I was from, I felt as though it came with the intention of strategically categorizing me into this hierarchical system of power based on skin color and identity. To me, that is America.
Hi, I'm Thomas Warren. I'm a black man from Inglewood, California. And my first thought of seeing George Floyd die on that video was anger, and that his life didn't matter enough to those four officers to want to spare it so he could see his day in court, which led to my second feeling of despair and just wanting to shake people and say that black folks don't want you to feel sorry for us. We just want some empathy and understanding that we want our lives to matter enough to be protected. And I'm hoping we can get there one day.
You're listening to Colors.
And that's where we go for our first look back, is with Thomas Warren, a senior assignment editor for the NFL Network. Thomas, thank you for agreeing to do this.
Thank you, JJ.
First question. Seen any difference since the George Floyd murder back in the summer in terms of race relations in the U.S.?
I would like to say that things have changed, and I guess to a certain degree they have. I think we saw that with the election in November, the presidential election. I think that was, I don't want to call it a seminal moment, but a moment where I think all of the groundswell from the summer and the protests and folks using their voices in different ways, whether in the streets or through social media or in conversations with friends and family, I think the election was the piece that I think people said, all right, well, this is the, when we talk about change and substantial change and meaningful change and something that's going to have a drastic shift in the way the country's going, I think the election was the moment where it was a culmination of folks saying, well, this is where I can put my stamp on this change that I want to see, that I'm going to vote out this person who in the highest office in the land has been a xenophobe, a homophobe, a racist, you name it. So I think in that essence, I think that has actually been seeing the change in the election, whether you, I think, are wholeheartedly behind Joe Biden or not. I think it was the idea that to allow Trump to be reelected was going to be a continuation of everything that had led to the summer of George Floyd and all the issues that I think when he was murdered and people saw that on video, finally took down the veil of folks not being able to say, oh, well, I didn't know anymore.
Breaking news on WTOP.
The historic Senate trial of President Trump has come to a close with his acquittal on both articles of impeachment. Let's go live to WTOP's Mitchell Miller today on the Hill.
Chief Justice John Roberts read the vote call on obstruction of Congress, which was 53-47.
The Senate adjudges that respondent Donald John Trump, President of the United States, is not guilty as charged in the second article of impeachment.
President Trump was also acquitted on the first article of impeachment, abuse of power. Utah Senator Mitt Romney was the sole Republican to vote to convict him of the charge, joining all of the Senate's Democrats.
Corrupting an election to keep oneself in office is perhaps the most abusive and destructive violation of one's oath of office that I can imagine.
The 52-48 vote, like the second vote, was far short of the 67 votes needed to convict the president and force him from office. Before the trial ended, the bitterness of this trial was on full display. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell took a shot at House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and again criticized the House impeachment inquiry.
Speaker of the House says she refuses to accept this acquittal, whatever that means. Perhaps she will tear up the verdict like she tore up the State of the Union address.
The proceeding did end on a note of calm, with the Senate leaders and Chief Justice Roberts thanking many of those who put in long hours during the trial.
Mitch, Senator Romney's vote, I imagine it wasn't a complete surprise to other Republicans, but there may be some repercussions for him?
Yes, absolutely. And there was a bit of a surprise. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell just told reporters that he was surprised and disappointed by Senator Romney's decision. It doesn't appear other Republican senators, except for maybe some that were very close to him, knew about his decision before he announced it today on the Senate floor shortly before the vote.
President Trump delivered on a promise today. He talked to reporters about his impeachment acquittal, but the speech dove into a host of topics as it meandered for more than an hour, eviscerating Democrats along the way.
We've been going through this now for over 3 years. It was evil. It was corrupt. It was dirty cops. It was leakers and liars. And this should never, ever happen to another president, ever.
Well, let's dive into the breadth of the comments with New York Times White House correspondent Peter Baker. Good to have you back, Peter. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This wasn't just a presidential spike of the football. This was maybe the political equivalent of the Lambeau leap and planting a flag on the logo of the Democrats at midfield. This was quite the speech by the president.
Well, it was. And of course, he tossed aside the prepared text that the staff had carefully crafted for him and was on, you know, full Trump mode, where he just kind of goes in his own stream of conscious kind of rambling way. And you can see kind of a mix of happiness over the acquittal, but still, you know, seething resentment and grievance over what he feels has been an unfair process to him. As usual, he's attacking his opponents at the same time he's celebrating his win. So it was a really classic moment. I think one of those ones that we'll remember for a while.
He was even talking about Hillary Clinton again, wasn't he?
Oh, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Hunter Biden, a lot of his favorites, Jim Comey, Andrew McCabe, Christopher Steele, you name them. He brought them all up. And in his mind, what these are part of a seamless conspiracy to get him, right? That these are not unrelated people or episodes. Every investigation that has happened is not a result of anything he did, but a result of this plot that has been orchestrated to take him down from the very beginning.
Russian disinformation pumped into the U.S. for years was apparently designed to rip the country apart. As we continue our series, Democracy Under Duress, WTOP National Security Correspondent J.J. Green reports the scheme has taken hold and reached institutions people never dreamed would fall prey to it.
Prominent, educated, affluent, and some Americans who are elected representatives allegedly have fallen victim to Russian disinformation and may now be or already have been targeted by spies.
Their public temperaments suggest that they would be prone to various approaches appealing to ego, approaches appealing to money, perhaps even approaches dealing with ideologies.
Former CIA Chief of Staff Larry Pfeiffer, the big question quietly circulating in national security channels is whether Russian money is involved.
I don't think there's money involved. I think there's political capital that is a huge part of this behavior.
Douglas Wise is former deputy director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. But Fiona Hill, former National Security Council director and expert on Russia, thinks a little differently.
The Russians have taken advantage from the fact that, you know, the Supreme Court has allowed large amounts of money to come into the political space in the United States.
And these agencies agents very quietly and meticulously have organized
political action committees to, you know, give money in clandestine fashion to small groups, to and individuals.
A lot of national security and intelligence sources have heard about it. Few are willing to speak publicly about it. And here's why.
It is very frightening not to be able to breathe.
Fear of being targeted. Vladimir Karamurza, a Russian political activist, was poisoned twice.
This was excruciatingly painful. That's actually one of the reasons the Kremlin and its security services like this method so much, because it is a sadistic method.
You say this is the U.S. and that would never happen here. The same thing was said about Russian disinformation 4 years ago. And coming up in my next report.
We are not as far down the rabbit hole as Russia and Russia's citizens are, but we are on the slippery slope.
Russian disinformation, now a part of American life. J.J. Green, WTOP News.
That next report will air all day tomorrow right here on WTOP, and you can read more at WTOP.com. Search national security.
The top local stories that we're following this hour. Breaking news today, the Washington Redskins are considering a name change. The team released a statement today announcing it will conduct a review of its name and acknowledging that it's been in discussions with the NFL about making the change. WTOP's Megan Clardy has more on this developing story.
In a release, the Washington Redskins say it's balancing a thorough review of the team's name, formalizing discussions it's had with the NFL in recent weeks. It's the first time the Redskins have publicly acknowledged consideration of a name change. Redskins owner Dan Snyder says, quote, "This process allows the team to take into account not only the proud tradition and history of the franchise, but also input from our alumni, organizations, sponsors, the league, and the community." Word from the team comes one day after FedEx publicly requested the Redskins change the team name and after Nike dropped Redskins merchandise off its site. Megan Clougherty, WTOP News.
The Oneida Indian Nation has been demanding for years that the Redskins change the name. And today it's welcoming the news that the team's stadium sponsor, FedEx, is also demanding this change.
These are all positive developments, and I think we'll continue to see a snowball effect.
Joe Barkin is with the Oneida Indian Nation's Change the Mascot campaign.
There is a right side to be on this issue, and FedEx has done that, and I think it's going to put other sponsors in a position that they're going to have to answer now.
The Wisconsin-based Indian tribe believes a review by the team isn't necessary here and the name should be dropped immediately.
Dan Snyder can stand on the right side of history and create a new positive legacy for his team by changing the name. Or he can instead continue to embrace a bigoted slur that denigrates Native Americans and people of color.
Mike Murillo, WTOP News.
The top local stories we're following this hour. The latest calls to change the Washington Redskins name appear to be gaining some traction for the first time. The team says it's now embarking on a thorough review of the name, and we're getting more reaction to the news.
Growing up, Kevin Blackistone remembers his father boycotting the Redskins after they refused to integrate, the last NFL team to do so in 1952. He also remembers seeing a protest against the team's name in the 90s.
And that's when I really started to think about this name needs to go.
He's a journalist and filmmaker in D.C. and says as our country continues to face its past, the Redskins should do the same and change their name.
If NASCAR can shed itself of the Confederate flag, and then yet this team in this city can continue to have this as an image, that's problematic.
The change would be a move he believes fans would support.
We should get on the right side of history.
Melissa Howell, WTOP News.
An Arizona woman who's a member of Navajo Nation has spent years fighting for the Washington Redskins, fighting with the Washington Redskins over the team's name. That includes a legal battle which went all the way to the Supreme Court. Now she's weighing in on the news that the team could be taking the first steps in changing its name.
With stadium sponsor FedEx and other sponsors calling on the name to change.
This is huge, you know, and I'm very happy about it. I'm very hopeful, but at the same time, I'm not going to celebrate just yet.
Amanda Blackhorse, who is Dene, believes renewed pressure comes from the many protests over the death of George Floyd.
I don't think that we would be where we're at right now with the Change the Mascot movement if that didn't happen.
For Black Horse, who lost a court battle to cancel the team's trademark, she's hopeful change will now come as the team says it will conduct a thorough review of the name.
We want to be able to have control over how we want to be represented, and it's not in sports.
Mike Murillo, WTOP News.
More on that story you just heard from CBS. 7 years ago, team owner Dan Snyder said it would never happen.
But today, the Washington Redskins has announced the team name is being dropped. Our team coverage begins with WTOP's John Doman.
For now, they're still the Redskins, but the team says once a new name is chosen, the Redskins' name and logo will be retired. There wasn't much said in a brief statement issued this morning, just that they're working on a new name. Multiple reports say the team's working through trademark issues that prevent them from announcing a new name yet, but it's unclear what new name they might be zeroing in on. Whatever it is, the franchise says this new name will inspire sponsors, fans, and the community for the next century. John Doman, WTOP News.
Meantime, members of the Native American community are reacting to the team's announcement. WTOP's Megan Clarity spoke with a man who's long been fighting for this day.
We've been in this battle for myself personally over 25 years.
John Tuhawks, a musician and advocate, runs nativecircle.com to educate the public about his Native American culture. Word that Washington's NFL team will change its name, he says, is hard to fathom.
Because Dan Snyder was so adamant he would never change the name. It's kind of amazing what's happening, really.
Tuhawks says there's concern the team will choose a name that keeps Native American imagery.
The R word itself is a racial slur, but everything that goes along with that, all of those things are offensive and stereotypical. And so the greatest hope is that he chooses a name that has nothing to do with ethnicity or racial groups at all.
Megan Clougherty, WTOP News.
And we want to hear from you and what you're thinking about the team changing its name. Call the TOP Talkback line. It's 844-282-1035. 844-282-1035. You can also tweet us your thoughts in a video using the handle at WTOP.
Well, pursuing a World Series trophy in the October air, that's one thing. Pursuing a player's signature in the Florida February heat, that's another. And it's a good thing WTOP's Dave Preston met up with some experts at Nationals spring training.
If genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration, getting an autograph at spring training is part technique, smile, long arms, and, well, perspiration. This is Florida. I ran into four boys from Staten Island and Long Island following their dreams. Nick Ronfulla leads the quartet.
You got to wish them a healthy season before. You got to sweet talk them.
Zach Silver has a secret technique.
Stand next to my nine-year-old brother.
Well, here's his brother, Ben.
What are the keys to getting a good autograph?
My cute face.
Robert Empardo rounds out the group.
So I think you got to try to get to the front of the line, reach your arm out as far as you can go.
We have pictures tweeted at DAV Presto and at WTOP. With arms outstretched at Nat Spring Training in West Palm Beach, Dave Preston, WTOP News.
Who knows when the entertainment world might start to reopen again? But in the meantime, plenty of artists have been taking their talents online, and that includes this Alexandria couple.
This all started as one of those social media challenges a lot of your friends might be doing now. In this case, 30 days of music for two professional musicians in Old Town Alexandria.
I was thinking, you know, those few posts that I see that peek out at my feed that were actually inspiring and music and beautiful and art were making me happy. So I thought, why can't we?
Yeah, we want it to be a part of
that. Why can't we inspire something more beautiful?
Meet Steven Seigert, a pianist, organist, and conductor, and his wife Suzanne Karpov, an opera singer.
Suzanne would sing, I would play the piano, and then I would produce it.
It started with a Disney spoof and some other produced pieces.
Pinch Tiger King, and I'll reread the books. Go live on Instagram.
People loved it. I mean, people just started sharing it and liking it. We had thousands of views on those first couple of videos.
But as it went on, all the work producing those videos got to be a bit much. So while they still sometimes collaborate with friends, most nights they're doing live performances on Facebook Live. A different theme every night on Suzanne's page, which is open for anyone to see.
The range of it has been a lot of fun to kind of stretch and practice.
Recent themes have been French music. Italian music. They've even done some famous songs from movies. And a night of Beatles music. And while it was supposed to be 30 days of music,
yeah, we're getting toward
the end.
We're
getting people saying you cannot stop, you need an extension.
John Doman, WTOP News.
WTOP at 6:32. The D.C. curfew kicks in at 7 o'clock tonight and tomorrow night. as the district prepares for potentially another violent evening and protesters all are already downtown.
What do we want?
Justice!
What do we want?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
Mayor Muriel Bowser says looters and others forced her hand into declaring the early curfew. Let's go to WDTOP's Megan Clardy.
D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser says after consecutive nights of looting and destruction, a 7 o'clock curfew is necessary.
We will not allow the continued destruction of our hometown by people who are coming here to protest or by D.C. residents.
She's asking those with cars parked downtown to move them. And Police Chief Peter Newsham is asking businesses to share any security video that will help identify who he calls bad actors. Essential workers and those voting Tuesday at polling places open until 8 p.m. are exempt from the 7 p.m. curfew.
If you are not a member of the media or you do not have an essential function, you can anticipate that local police and federal police will take you into custody. That is a warning.
Megan Clougherty, WTOP News.
Protesters have been demonstrating outside the U.S. Capitol tonight. WTOP's Mitchell Miller today on the Hill.
Protesters chanting, "Hands up, don't shoot," demonstrating on behalf of George Floyd. The demonstration led Capitol Police to set up a perimeter on the east side of the Capitol. Dozens of protesters gathered on the Senate side. The Senate is back in session this week, and lawmakers have been speaking on the Senate floor about what's happening across the country. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell condemns what happened to George Floyd and says he understands the need for protests, but he also condemns violence and vandalism.
It does not advance freedom or justice to vandalize the World War II memorial that stands for those who bled and died for exactly those values.
On Capitol Hill, Mitchell Miller, WTOP News.
Now, Metro is cutting back on its hours in response to the mayor's 7 p.m. curfew. Metro Rail will close at 8. Metro Bus, the service there, will end at 9. Now, this is for tonight only. WMATA says it will announce any other changes as necessary. Stay with WTOP. More on the protests, not only in D.C., but in the suburbs as well. 6:34.
And now a word from
today
Andrew
at IBM.com/thinkgov.
WTOP News Time, 6:35. We continue to cover the violence that has hit the streets of D.C. over the past three nights. And the protests over the death of George Floyd have not only been in the city, they've also been in the suburbs, and a large crowd has marched through the streets of Gaithersburg this evening. That group was protesting the death of George Floyd and others. Let's go to WDTOP's Mike Murillo.
They recited the names of those who died. As they marched, some held up signs saying, "George Floyd innocent," others, "No justice, no peace." They chanted the same. The crowd continued to chant as it marched through the streets of Gaithersburg. Police closed off roads as the crowd came through. They ended in front of a movie theater for a rally that wrapped up a peaceful protest. In Gaithersburg, Mike Murillo, WTOP News.
We are standing by for a statement from President Trump from the White House on the protests. It would be the first formal statement from the president since the protests began. Meantime, the president has blasted state governors, saying they're not doing enough to stop the violent protests.
The president told governors and mayors he expects to see mass arrests. He says state officials have to dominate the streets and use the National Guard to do it.
What, you're not calling them up? I don't know. You're making a mistake because you're making yourself look like fools.
This audio of the teleconference obtained by CBS News has the president vowing to clamp down here in Washington, D.C. He says he's put the chairman of the Joint Chiefs in charge. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
Stay with us here on WTOP. 23 minutes to go until curfew goes into effect in the district. We'll have the latest. 6:37.
As an essential business. $81.99 today.
WTOP at 6:38. Traffic and weather on the 8th and Dave Dildine in the WTOP Traffic Center.
Westbound at I-66, Centerville to Manassas, still a slow go. The broken-down dump truck near Bull Run was cleared, but farther west, closer to the rest area, had a crash reported. No update as of recently, other than the very slow westbound traffic here on I-66. No slow traffic on the Beltway in Virginia or in Maryland. From Germantown to Gaithersburg on 270 southbound, slow toward the Watkins Mill work zone where the right side should be blocked. No work zones reported yet on 95 between the Beltway's Route 50. Good between the Beltway and the Eastern Shore. Downtown, less than a half hour before the curfew, still have a few demonstration groups near Lafayette Square where many streets are shut down by authorities. H, I, and even K Street blocked. near 16th, 17th, and 19th Streets. A group moving westbound from DuPont Circle down Q Street toward the West End and several others. Vandalism over the weekend near Mount Vernon Square and the Carnegie Library. Police activity remains in Mount Vernon Square. Delays on Massachusetts Avenue near the Convention Center. Freeway traffic, though, without incident. Crosstown of the Southeast Southwest Freeway, D.C. Interstate 295, and the Potomac and Anacostia River Bridges. All systems are normal. Traffic brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Proud to serve members of the Armed Forces, DOD veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Dave Dildine, WTOP traffic.
WTOP forecast. Clouds move in after midnight tonight. Lows in the mid-50s, mid-70s for a high tomorrow. 74 right now in the nation's capital.
Breaking news on WTOP.
We have a developing situation in downtown D.C. as we are 20 minutes away from a curfew in the city. Let's go live to downtown. WTOP's Ken Duffy is on the scene. He's on Skype. Ken, what do you have?
Well, Sean, things have gone from 0 to 60 in a matter of seconds. I was at the front line there on 16th and H, seeing military police joining a Secret Service on their line. All of a sudden, tear gas deployed at 16th and H Street. I saw police on horseback coming from the eastern end of H Street, pushing everyone back. Everyone started running toward Connecticut Avenue, and that's where we are right now. But a very, very tense situation here. They mean business tonight to try to enforce this curfew, which happens in about 20 minutes from now. But I did not see what actually precipitated that use of tear gas. But we saw a bunch of it deployed, and we have been pushed back now to Connecticut Avenue, and remains to be seen what's going to happen next from here on out, Sean.
Ken, when we talked to you last, you had mentioned that the crowd seemed to be growing rather than receding as we got near the curfew. Is that still the case right now?
Oh, yes. This is a very, very large crowd. When I got here, there were hundreds, now if not thousands of people, and as we said, it does not look like anybody's going to be leaving anytime soon. This curfew is at 7 p.m., and I saw earlier there were MPD officers, dozens, staging at Farragut Square on foot and on bikes to enforce this. But again, all of a sudden, they came out of nowhere, really, on horseback on 8th Street on the eastern side and pushed us west, down 8th. And you could hear the more flashbangs again behind me. And I can't tell if that's a flashbang or fireworks, because I have seen protesters kind of responding with fireworks as well. But it is still very tense here, Sean, on scene here near the White House.
Ken, have you witnessed any violence at this point in the evening from protesters?
Sean, I really haven't. I've seen some pushback between protesters and Secret Service, but Secret Service did not really get close to the protesters. They have these barricades set up, as they have every night here down in D.C. I did not see any kind of skirmishes, but as I'm talking to you, people are now moving back again away from Connecticut Avenue down 8th Street, so they must be approaching. Actually, I see the police officers right now on horseback. They're coming right at us. We are all moving back. Cops are waving people back as they are on their horseback. They may be deploying tear gas again. Stay with me here. A lot of people moving back. We don't know how far. They may be pushing us back to Georgetown or Foggy Bottom. Well, we're here. I am safe. We are seeing police right now. I can see them clearly coming down the street. No more tear gas deployed as of yet. They are simply trying to wave people back. And no deployment of tear gas. And again, like I said, as you heard behind me, there were flashbangs. Pretty sure it was fireworks, because a lot of the protesters have that here. But we have now cleared back to 17th Street. And as I turn behind me, MPD and riot gear have pretty much cornered off this intersection. So they are pretty much penning in the protesters and kind of directing them down 17th Street. They do not want them to go past 17th and H. So they have formed a perimeter. If you can see the visual here, it's a line of police in riot gear on one side of the street on 17th and another on 8th Street. So half of the intersection cut off. They're trying to corral people to head southbound on 17th. So they are clearly trying to get everyone out of here before the curfew begins at 7. They do not want to take any chances. So there's another. Those are just fireworks. And now we see more tear gas. It's coming toward us. I am safe. I'm just running backwards.
Okay, Ken.
Right by us.
Okay.
All right. I'm okay. Don't worry.
All right.
Stick with me. A lot of people running.
Ken, we should tell you that all of this is happening just as President Trump began his address from the White House, so this may have been a coordinated event trying to move that perimeter back as the president was speaking to avoid any possible conflict there.
Yeah. Boy, Sean, this has really been an intense enforcement here.
Uh-huh.
Incredibly intense. A lot of tear gas just deployed. I got out of there right before it was hit here. And again, I'm okay, so don't worry about me.
Okay, what about the people who are the people in front of you? How are they doing?
Boy, you know, as I was running away, people were falling. You know, I don't see any major injuries, but, you know, it was a stampede to get out of there. So a lot of people stumbling, and we're seeing some people trying to head away on Pennsylvania Avenue, away from the White House on Pennsylvania Avenue. But police have basically now taken a position at the intersection I was just at 17th and 8th. So they do not want anyone coming up there. Clearly that was the plan, to take everyone out of 8th Street. And that whole area is now secured by military police, Secret Service, and the MPD, Sean.
All right, WTOP's Ken Duffy on the scene, 17th and H, not far from the White House this evening, as tear gas has been fired, flashbangs fired as well, as police, law enforcement, along with military personnel, have been moving a perimeter all the way back away from Lafayette Square and the White House. We are seeing video feeds as well as a phalanx of officers are moving that group of people just a couple of blocks away from the White House, and they are moving slowly down the streets. WTOP's Ken Duffy was under tear gas fire as he talked to us just in the last several minutes. We're going to go back to Ken soon as he has a chance to catch his breath. But again, we have a situation in downtown D.C. tonight, just 13 minutes before a curfew goes into effect in the district. Tear gas has been fired, flashbangs fired, as thousands of protesters gather around Lafayette Square and the streets surrounding the White House, as we have apparently a fourth night of police activity and violence in the protest over the death of George Floyd. Stay with WTOP. We'll have more coming up soon. It's 6:47.
Right now, promo, regular rates apply.
WTOP at 6:48. Traffic and weather on the 8th. Back to Dave Dildine in the WTOP Traffic Center.
All right, obviously downtown Washington is not a place you want to intentionally drive right now. Many blocks are off limits because of that police activity and crowd control. Even a portion of K Street was blocked between 16th and 19th Streets northwest. Other parts of Washington, smaller protests ongoing. Q Street between DuPont Circle and the West End. We had a group in the intersection with Q and 17th blocking that intersection, and likely many more as well. Police activity also reported near Mount Vernon Square and the Carnegie Library, causing delays on Massachusetts Avenue. But as far as the freeways go in Washington, there are no delays on the Southeast Southwest Freeway, the Whitehurst Freeway, to and from the Potomac River bridges. Everything is quiet on the big roads through the district. In Virginia, on I-66, westbound still slow from Centerville into Manassas. Had a crash reported before Business 234, no specifics. Maryland, 270, new crash north of Hyattstown before 80 Urbana. At most, only a single file getting by between 109 and 80 southbound for the Watkins Mill project. Beyond the on-ramp from Germantown, Middlebrook Road, you're getting by to the left, slowly southbound toward Gaithersburg on 270. Water damage caused by clogged rain gutters can cost you thousands. Gutter Helmet is helping by offering free installation and no payments until 2021. Call 888-5-HELMET today. Dave Dildine, WTOP Traffic.
Let's get your forecast. Storm Team 4, Amelia Draper.
We'll have one more comfortable day out there tomorrow, and then hot and humid with some storm chances Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Now tonight, mainly clear skies during the evening hours. Clouds move in overnight. Mid to upper 50s for lows. Upper 60s to mid 70s for highs tomorrow with plenty of clouds and the chance for an isolated shower or two, especially north and east of Washington. Mostly to partly sunny, hot and humid on Wednesday. Bit of a breeze as well. Upper 80s to mid 90s. There's a chance for some scattered showers and thunderstorms on Wednesday, but the risk fairly low at about 30%. A better chance for some showers and thunderstorms, especially later in the day,
Thursday and then on into Friday with highs in the mid-80s to around 90. The weekend looking dry, upper 80s on Saturday, around 80 on Sunday. I'm Storm Team 4 meteorologist Amelia Draper.
Sunny skies and 74 degrees in Washington.
Breaking news on WTOP.
Our continuous coverage of the protests in Washington, D.C. and the surrounding area over the death of George Floyd. And tonight, not far from the White House, tear gas fired, flashbangs fired at a group of thousands of protesters who had gathered around Lafayette Square and in the streets surrounding the White House. A phalanx of law enforcement officers, military personnel, moving the crowd back away from 16th and H, anywhere close to the White House. Those protesters have been moved back at least one block. WTOP's Ken Duffy was on the scene just minutes ago describing to us how the protesters scrambled after the tear gas was fired. He got to safety. You could see others in video feeds who were coughing and had their eyes watering because they saw the tear gas. This all happened just as President Trump was about to give his speech from the White House about the protesters in not only D.C., but all around the country over the death of George Floyd. Of course, we've had violence in so many cities in the United States over the past few days. Now, let's find out what else is going on tonight. President Trump has just finished up his address from the White House Rose Garden about the federal government's response to those protests. Let's see what he had to say.
That is why I am taking immediate presidential action to stop the violence and restore security and safety in America. I am mobilizing all available federal resources, civilian and military, to stop the rioting and looting, to end the destruction and arson, and to protect the rights of law-abiding Americans, including your Second Amendment rights. Therefore, the following measures are going into effect immediately. First, we are ending the riots and lawlessness that has spread throughout our country. We will end it now. Today, I have strongly recommended to every governor to deploy the National Guard in sufficient numbers that we dominate the streets.
Dominate the streets. Those words from President Trump just minutes ago from the White House. He has mobilized the U.S. military to try to end what he calls riots and lawlessness. As far as the violent protests are concerned over the death of George Floyd, who died 1 week ago in Minneapolis. Now, we are on the scene near Lafayette Square, near the White House, 7 minutes before a curfew goes into effect in Washington, D.C. But the enforcement of a zone around the White House went into effect much earlier than that. It was before 6:30 when we started to see police and law enforcement and military personnel move the protesters back. And as they kept moving, tear gas was fired into the crowd, flashbangs fired into the crowd, and the thousands scrambled at least a block back from the perimeter surrounding the White House. Things have calmed down a tad right now. We do have WTOP's Ken Duffy on the scene, also WTOP's Alejandro Alvarez. He is there tonight. We will be hearing from them all through the evening as, again, we have a fourth night of protests in the district and police activity with tear gas along with flashbangs. Stay with WTOP for the latest.